Welcome to Linux Link Radio by TimeSys, the podcast for embedded Linux developers who want to simplify and speed up their custom platform development. Visit TimeSys.com today for access to our podcast archives.
Hi, this is Maciej Halasz here.
And Gene Sally.
This week we're going to talk about Gene's travel to Austria.
Yeah, they let me out of the office, for which is a switch.
Again. I guess that you were at the Consumer Electronics Forum, right?
Yes.
In Austria, where you were presenting on several topics.
Yeah, I was at Linz. It was the city, and it was at a university. It was really nice. It was a great conference. A lot of folks there. It ran over Friday and Saturday. And it was, you know, very well attended. A lot of people that were in all different stages of their embedded Linux work.
So can you introduce a bit the CELF conference itself? Because for new listeners that are not familiar with that conference, what is it all about?
Sure, this is sponsored by the Consumer Electronics Forum. And it started out, I mean, the genesis of the CELF was for Linux on commercial device, not commercial devices, but on consumer devices. Telephones, a small little handheld things, consumer electronic piece, right? That's the whole consumer electronic forum, right? That's what they call that. But it has since morphed into more or less a embedded Linux in a general sense, community and forum. So it's a... I said it has folks that do consumer electronics, people who do industrial work. Mm. Of course, there's always the real-time folks that are in there as well. Over embedded Linux.
Is it
show?
Well, I know that you've presented at that show in California, so it's not like this is regional or something that happens only in Europe. That actually CELF happens all over the world, like embedded systems conference.
The primary organizer, Tim Bird, he tries to do a conference in the U.S., and then he tries to do one outside the U.S. every year. And in fact, next year's is in, and I sincerely probably can't pronounce it, but it's in Mexico, and that'll be, which it was funny, the guy who described it as being centrally located, right? Mexico was, you know, centrally located between the U.S. and South America. I got a big laugh out of that. But so there's one conference in the U.S. and then one outside the U.S. So there's, you know, presentations at least twice a year. So it's a great way for, you know, to get together folks that are inside the industry, see what's going on new.
So primarily the people that visit that show are engineers and architects from different companies that want to find out about where Linux is going for the specific domains that they work in, or?
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's both managers folks, right? So there were manager folks there. There were engineer folks. They were interested in new developments in Linux. And there were also a lot of people that were just getting oriented with Linux and wanted to stick their toes in the water and understand what is this thing I'm considering doing. So it is. It's a good mix of extremely experienced people and, you know, people that are new, and managers and engineers, and of course, you know, it's Linux. So the people you do with are, you know, all of them are nice, right? Which is one of the great things about Linux shows.
So you've mentioned that it was well attended. Hundreds.
Yes.
Great. And let's talk about a few topics that you presented on. I know that you had presented on GCC. You another topic that you presented on at that show was embedded Linux for the beginners. And a third one, I think, was, correct me if I'm wrong, using RPM as a build system.
Oh yeah, so I got three things accepted for presentation. The first thing we did is a, you know, discussion about GCC from an embedded engineer's perspective. How does it work? How does a cross compilation work? What are some tips and tricks you could use to get the most out of GCC? I mean, the most entertaining one, right? So you do this and you do the talk, you say, hey, if you do --pound, pound, pound, it'll show everything that's going on. Right. And then the other thing that I think the folks got a kick out of was if you pass, I think, -ME and a -, and whatever, it'll be posted in the CLF site, the presentation. It'll come out with all the predefined macros, right? There's all kinds of little tips and tricks where if you're doing porting or working with, you know, non-x86 systems that you really need to know about. That was really, it was a standing room only thing, which I sort of amazed me. it wasn't like a four, there wasn't like there were four seats in the room, which I know you're going to make fun of me about, right? But, but no,
reading
but
my mind.
Yeah. Yeah. There's four seats in the room and five people came, right?
No.
Yeah.
So, how many attendees did you have?
You know, I would probably say I had at least 30 for that. And the bummer thing is that it was rescheduled, right? Mm. Because
you missed the flight.
It wasn't, I didn't purposefully miss the flight, right?
I know.
But I got at the airport too late to make my connection despite sprinting across the airport.
Yeah. So I think that GCC itself is a very complex tool.
Oh, it is.
And a lot of people that start with GCC and even the ones that are fairly advanced, they very often, you know, use maybe 10, 20% of properties that you get access to, and which are, by the way, enabled by default. But did you have any questions from the audience?
Tons of questions.
Can you share some of the most interesting ones with our audience?
So some of the questions had to deal with configuring GCC for other libraries, mm-hmm. the mechanics involved in that, and in particular, what was GPL and what wasn't because of the static versus dynamic linking. Mm. That was because I did stop by and talk about alternate C libraries, mm-hmm. which is sort of like my entertainment. I'm shudder to even call it that, right? But there are the people that are interested in alternate C libraries and how they work and the mechanics behind that. So we talked about that. And then we also talked, we dug in and talked about things whenever you use the --\pound and how it locates libraries and how it locates header files, mm-hmm. and how to tune that so that it works for your project. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times I find this, and you probably find it too, and maybe the folks that listen, is that embedded projects have a extraordinarily long life, right? And so you typically have some file that is, or some project where no one's going to ever change an extension name, and no one's ever going to change how things work, but you still need to be able to pass in the right things to the compiler so that it mm-hmm. behaves correctly. Mm-hmm. And so GCC has a million and a half tuning options there.
And I think that people get to those options when they run into problems, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because if everything works well mm-hmm. and you got the right performance out of your application, I don't think that they are really looking at other optimization levels that they can get with GCC.
Sure.
Because it usually means a trade-off of some sort.
Yeah.
But once they run into a problem, once they macro misbehaves or application misbehaves, and they have to track down what's going on.
Oh, you know what? I'm sorry. I should have talked, because another thing you can do with GCC is you can stop it after it's pre-processed, before it's done. And there's all kinds of defects, right, that you can code in due to macros. Mm-hmm. And the way macros expand in C, it's not always obvious, right? And so you can... you can code yourself a bug you'll never find. And that was another thing we talked about a little bit.
I agree that... I started again. I agree that the topic of GCC and how to... the complexities behind it and what you can do with it, how you can track down certain issues and figure out what's going on in your application is a very interesting topic to our audience. So perhaps we can do a dedicated Linux Link podcast episode on that.
Yeah.
But I wanted to ask you about other topics that you presented on, because embedded Linux topic, that's I'm sure that was of a high interest to your audience.
Yeah, so what I did is I did this one presentation was just getting started with embedded Linux. And it wasn't to be patronizing, it wasn't to be non-technical or anything. It was geared for engineers that find themselves, or managers that find themselves doing a project with Linux that mm-hmm. may not be familiar with Linux from an embedded perspective. Mm-hmm. And so we talked through the different parts of the system, like the root file system and the kernel and the C library and how all those things interacted, and this cross compiler thing that you need, and why you should be interested in using a JTAG debugger, and when it is the right thing for you to use and when it isn't, different debugging techniques, different approaches to creating your root file system. We talked a little bit about the GPL, in terms of hot button topics, that was a hot button topic. I think every reasonable discussion that was followed by me saying, and I'm not a lawyer, you should consult one, right, to really understand. I'm no substitute for legal advice.
Well, that's one
but
of
there's
the
still a lot of questions around that.
Well, I think that this is a very hot topic, and we got the gist of how important it is when we had a discussion with Mad Dog in Toronto, mm-hmm. and he indicated that lawyers are really advisors, but you should make up your own mind.
Oh, yes.
But okay.
So, and the other thing too that I guess some of this in terms of the whether your whether your code is released and how to make it available, and most of the people that were there were not interested in skirting the GPL, right. but they were interested in complying with it. And it wasn't an issue of I want to get whatever available to me in open source and be as stingy as possible.
Right.
But the more of the questions were along the line of, hey, I want to be a good citizen because I want to be a good citizen.
There are so many discussions around GPL mm-hmm. and red flags being thrown by different organizations that, yeah. There's a new GPL version,
yeah.
Right? There's still the open source versus proprietary device drivers discussion, mm-hmm. which makes it confusing for an entry-level engineer, a beginner engineer that starts with embedded Linux to figure out what's the right way,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. So it was this talk was scheduled for 3 hours, right? And so I thought to myself, I did my slides and I rehearsed, which I don't think anyone believes it. And I thought to myself, wow, I'm not going to be able to talk past an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours at the most. And we went all the way to 3 hours of the entire session, not even a bio break in the middle or anything, just straight on through. And so I was, because we had questions and comments, as went through and addressed them. So I was really impressed by the level of interest, not just about, we concentrated now about right. the GPL thing, but across all the subjects that we discussed, there was some interesting.
Any most interesting subjects that or questions that you'd like to share with us here?
Oh, so for that we got into debugging.
Debugging.
And I know we talked about debugging here, and one of the recommendations for debugging is, especially remote debugging, is don't do it, right? Mm. And for that audience, that was a fairly new, I shouldn't say it was even a semi-shocking comment. And when you explain to people, it's like, hey, the Linux system on your desktop is in fact is in fact good enough for local debugging, right? It's POSIX has the same interface, right? It has the same C library interface. You could probably create the same devices on it. There's no real reason for you to do remote debugging until the end, until closer to the end of your project. You can still find all your logic problems and whether your loops are off by one and all that other issue just by debugging locally.
It got me scared there for a second because I thought that you're going to say don't do a remote debugging, period.
Oh, no. It's most certainly necessary, but it's certainly not where you start. The other topic was development on Windows. There mm-hmm. are still a lot of folks that want to know what's available, how can I do my development natively on Windows, and is that even a concept I can even try, or is that just craziness even thinking I can do that? Yeah. And of course it isn't, right? We talked about AutoMake and AutoConf tools too, which I think was a layer of complexity some of the audience wasn't expecting. And at one point they said, well, can you explain to me the difference between host, build, and target? Mm-hmm. And every time I have to, it's an arduous process. It's like, okay, so target is used for cross compiler, so we can forget that, right? Because that's where, so really it's host and build. And build means build it for this particular machine, right? And host is the machine things are running on. And so it's, I had to go out and explain this, and maybe one of the listeners can write in because I still haven't about whenever you have host, target, and build all being something different, right? That's called a Canadian cross build, which is supposed mm-hmm. to be some configuration of Canadian Parliament. And I know when someone described this to me, they were laughing and they thought it was very entertaining, and I didn't understand them, but I laughed along too because I didn't want to make hurt their feelings or whatever. And so I was playing along. I just played along. Oh, that's really funny, but. Because I didn't understand, I didn't retain. So maybe someone can write in and explain to me exactly what the Canadian cross is and why that's sort of funny. And
I'm sure we'll get a lot of emails on that.
Oh, yeah.
Do you want to talk about RPM?
RPM, yeah.
Okay.
So RPM is a build system. This was probably the lightest attended. It was close to the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And this was another, I had a 2 hour slot for this. And I looked, it's like, well, there's no way I'm going to go over. And I went way over. And so even on the GCC, I went over on that too. And the amazing thing, okay, so here's, I consider this amazing. Okay. People skipped the coffee break. I thought coffee break Yeah, the room, the room went empty. And, you know, you'd see the papers fly behind them. No, they actually stuck to the coffee break. Yeah.
So people were very interested.
Well, that means either the coffee was bad, right? I don't know. Or so anyway, but for RPM, we just talked about, you know, here at TimeSys, right? We produce RPM components that are cross-compiled, and that's how we sort of put together distributions for users.
This is our packaging system, yeah.
Yeah, and I wanted just to talk about that and say, hey, if you want to do this, here's what's involved. Here's what RPM does. It's not some magic tool that does magic things, right? It's a build tool, and you know, here's how it can help you. Here's where you can get into sticky points. You know, here's a model project. Here's the important moving elements. And for that, I didn't get a lot of questions for that. I don't know whether it was the end of the day and people were tired, or I simply talked them into submission, or
I
don't know.
That topic appeals to perhaps a group of embedded engineers, because when you talk about Linux, everybody in the embedded space cares about Linux. But when you talk about packaging technique for root file system, that's there are so many options, right? And in some cases, people are not thinking in terms of RPMs when they think about root file system, because people think about just simply packages that they want to.
Well, you know, I try to do as fair a shake as possible. Right? I didn't want to be the RPM fanboy, right? So we talked about a couple other packaging systems out there that were out there. Mm-hmm. We talked about RPM's weaknesses, and then the different advantages of using some other packaging systems, and you know, why you'd even want to use a packaging system to start with, right? Because it's in some cases not necessary, but in other cases it's extremely handy, and it's somewhat like some of the non-obvious cases where if you have a team that's distributed across a great area, you know, deciding on using a uniform packaging type makes it easy for them to submit what they consider a finished product into your system. Or, you know, if you're dealing with a contractor and you want to be able to have a consistent build that's all encapsulated and want to be able to put things together, specifying an RPM as an output, you know, probably is the right thing to do.
It's a very simple way of managing versions, dependencies, and completeness of a solution that you provide to some other users.
Oh, yeah. So it was one of the interesting questions I got out of that lecture is someone said, well, do I need to do RPM build every time I rebuild my project when I'm doing development? And it was very interesting to have people confuse the package management elements of RPM along with their regular compilation, edit, debug loop.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say they're unrelated. Of course, they're certainly very much related. But one of the important things to remember about or any packaging system is that it's not how you build every time that you're ready. It's it's how you set up a ready-to-be-built source tree in order to get it distributed. And that is something that took a while to get across. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the listener was unintelligent, but the concepts people, I know you're making fun of me, but it took a while to get across because a lot of people have this preconception about what RPM is. Right. Yeah. And you know, they don't understand what the tool does. And we would talk for a while and then like the light bulb went off. He's like, okay. So now I understand why I'd even, you know, now you're saying why I even want to use this.
Yeah. I think that, the reason why I made that face was because this is, I think, a challenge, just like with any other new approach or new project that gets introduced by open source, where you have to educate or help people understand what are the goals behind certain projects, right? And as you said, RPM is a way of packaging a specific source tree. Mm-hmm. So that you can easily pass it on to others. But I think that a lot of people still kind of like, when they design the root file system, they think in terms of, I need BusyBox, I need DropBear, I need some other package.
Yeah, yeah.
And they don't really care what's the packaging system as long as it does what it's supposed to.
Right? Yeah, yeah. So it was quite interesting. Some of the questions on that I got around that were because I think RPM was misunderstood as the tool it was. Yeah. And so I didn't view my job as to convince people into using RPM, but my job was to inform people as to what RPM was good for. Right. You know, maybe all those people left and thought, holy cow, I never want to use that because I'm trying to solve a different problem.
Right.
And maybe some people left and said, oh, so that fits the problem. So I just wanted to have people really understand what it did. And I tried to compare and contrast against some other packaging systems too, so it would be reasonably understood.
So, I would like to actually ask our listeners to please let us know if you would be interested in finding out or us talking about different packaging systems.
Oh, sure.
Because if that topic is of an interest, we are definitely going to cover it. But.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure how many people... See, it was later in the day, and I'm not sure how many people... elected to go to this because it was versus some other things. So it was difficult for me to tell. Probably maybe 10 attendees who actually stayed the whole time. I was always impressed. It must just be custom there, right? Because I didn't have anyone walk out and discuss.
I think that your topics were very interested, and I saw your slides before we left. So
yeah.
Very good. So, but
As long as you think they're okay, Maciej. Yeah.
You got my blessing.
You know, I write them. I think to myself, well, what would Maciej think? Is this okay for Maciej?
Well, that's what you usually do. You shout because we sit next to each other.
Unfortunately.
Well, thank you. But I wanted to ask you another question because I know that you presented on three topics, but you mentioned that you were invited to a panel.
Oh, yeah.
So I would like to talk to you about that.
It was really neat.
Talk a bit about it. I mean, what was the purpose of this panel? What was the topic? And then who were the attendees?
So the purpose was for us to argue about what the best embedded Linux packaging, the best Linux distribution, like what is the best
distribution.
Linux distribution. And so, I probably should have prepared for my podcast and written down because I have a notoriously short memory, right? And there was people that were representing the customer field. And then there were some folks representing the traditional distributions, mm-hmm. and then someone representing like the developers, mm-hmm. and the one guy I remember, his name was Wookie, who does the embedded Linux, the embedded Debian distribution.
Uh-huh.
Heck of a nice guy. I felt really bad for I felt bad for him because he had a lot of great ideas. But at the end of the table was Tom Leixner, who's just louder, right? And so because this guy, he was very soft spoken, and he just had trouble, I think, correctly getting the attention of the moderator. Oh. And so that was unfortunate because a lot of his ideas were excellent. And I felt bad for him. I really did.
So more or less 7 to 10 panalists.
So we said 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 panelists.
Seven panelists. Yeah. And how many people attended?
You know what? I don't know. We were in the big room.
Yeah.
And so it was like it was stadium style seating.
Right.
And maybe there were 90, 150 people. It was fuller than I thought. I sat down and it was the first time I did anything like this. And my heart was going thump, 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 thump the whole time. And I'm thinking to myself, oh my gosh, I'm going to say something bad and they're going to make me walk home
or
swim home with a brick around my neck.
Especially
or something
that you're the first to talk, right?
No, I was second.
Second.
So second to talk. And
the main concepts around the discussions that you would like to share with our audience here.
So it was an interesting, it sort of got, like all panel discussions do. They had Tim, mm-hmm. whose name I do remember, Tim Bird, who was the... sort of running the panel, mm-hmm. and his moderator. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so I sort of felt bad for him because we took a detour off into QA, right? Which is always interesting, right? Because you can spend a lot of time in that. That's nearly the religion of software development is mm-hmm. QA in some respects.
Well, but I guess since you talked about the primary topic was the distributions.
So thanks for getting me on track. See, it's already derailing our discussion now, right?
Yeah.
So we want to talk about the question was what is the ideal Linux distribution, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so,
what is the ideal Linux distribution?
I'm sort of pausing for a second because I'm trying to compose. So, when I was asked, I didn't hear the other two people before me because I was so nervous because I was trying to say something that would be sane, right? And I presented the ideal Linux distribution from my perspective, which is one that's gives you the maximum amount of freedom with respect to what you're able to assemble,
mm-hmm.
and lets you pick and choose and take advantage of what's available in the open source community. And at the same time, still get you running quickly, which mm-hmm. I know are two opposing ideas, right? And so that was the main point that I wanted to get across. Mm-hmm. And so that was my ideal Linux distribution.
So let me repeat that back. The ideal Linux distribution, according to you, was a Linux distribution that is not locking users into any specific versions of anything. So you can pick any Linux kernel, you can pick any packages for root file system, but you still want to have ability to get that distribution somehow from somewhere assembled
Correct.
Nicely.
Yes.
So that it accelerates your initial experience with Linux as well, right? Because
yes.
that was another point, I guess, from our earlier talks.
Yeah. In your attempt to get me focused to talk about this for a little bit. So, yeah. And it was interesting because the guys, the one guy from some other company, right?
Okay.
He talked about how it was interesting in that they presented a distribution almost like a monolith, right? Mm-hmm. Like you get the distribution from us. You don't vary from what you get from us. You don't pick and choose what you get from us. We give you what works. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, it's like, wow, you know, as someone that does Linux, why would you even get into that sort of situation? Because you've given up all the freedom that you want with Linux, that you expected with Linux, for what is a software model, you know, for a package software model. Mm-hmm. It's not like you're, I don't understand, you know, I don't understand the benefit if you want to go with Linux behind taking that route.
So
that was interesting. And so I was able to talk from that perspective.
So I would imagine that every one of the panelists had an opinion on that.
Oh, yeah.
But do you have any, well, I'm interested in audience reaction. I mean, did you guys get any questions around that distribution?
Oh, sure.
And what was the prevailing theme or question that you were getting?
So we got a couple of things where like, you know, so the audience pipes in and says, hey, you know, for us, a distribution has some benefits to it. Mm-hmm. It's not as though that, you know, it's not as though that it's all bad from our perspective. You know, who cares if it's, you know, 10 versions ago, it's the one that works. And we like to keep modifying the one that works to our needs, and so be it. And that was interesting. The other interesting thing from the audience was the, in my opinion, fixation on kernel. Okay. Almost as though kernel meant distribution. And, you know, I was there and I'm thinking, I piped in a couple of times and said, hey, you know, distribution's not a monolith. You should be able to change the components out in the user space. And then there was a lot of talk about minutiae about, well, you know, how much of a change is acceptable to the kernel if you want to use a different one than the one we happened to get from our distribution vendor. Mm-hmm. And it was very interesting about the way that discussion went. And I guess my point was, is like, when I listened to this, you know, it seems as though the audience is willing to pick using almost any change. You know, almost any change to the kernel is bad, but there's not the same sort of reaction when it comes to user land. Mm-hmm. And in fact, in user land, the effects of what people are trying to insulate themselves by locking down a kernel can be just as catastrophic, you know, if you don't lock down on user land programs. And that sort of vigilance with respect to what happens in user land versus what happens in the kernel was very interesting. It was almost as though you know, people could understand. This is an interesting thing. So people that could understand what was happening were more accepting of newer versions. And so some people didn't understand what happened in the kernel, and therefore they were very uncomfortable about using another version. And the people that were very uncomfortable with what was happening in user land were very uncomfortable about using different user land versions.
Right.
And people that are uncomfortable about both were QA engineers, right?
So I guess it's very similar to the earlier topic that we talked about, RPM, which is knowledge is actually everything, right?
Yeah.
If you understand the scope of changes and you understand the impact of those changes on the stability of what you work on, you're willing to accept those changes knowing that they introduce some new fixes, new patches, new code. But to get to that point where you have that understanding, that usually takes some effort. And so I guess you've mentioned three concepts out of that discussion that the audience was interested in. I made a few notes here.
Oh.
Modify the distribution that works, right? So what customers want is something that works. Not necessarily, they don't want to be locked into specific versions. Uh-huh. They want, when they're at the beginning of their project, the latest and greatest, but they want something that works.
Oh, that's something you point out. It's like, that was a thing that I heard. It's like, well, when I start my project, I want what's newest, and then I'm going to stick with that.
Yes.
Which is, it was an interesting, I think I've heard that from, from the people that I work with, but it was good validation to hear that from other, folks. It was a much more random sample.
Mm-hmm. But another thing that you've just said is that people do understand, have that good understanding of user land packages and also how they evolve as they progress in their project, that versions fixes to some of the packages that they use for root file system design also get changed, and how that affects their project and the life cycle of where they are with the project, right? So that understanding is also another validation, I guess, for us to address some of the concepts on the next podcast here.
Oh, yeah. So completely fascinating, some of the effects you see and in terms of what people are willing to change and what they're not. And
So at the end of the panel, how long was the panel?
It lasted an hour. And in fact, I think at one point Tim Bird described it as a love fest. and we weren't being controversial enough. So
you were agreeing all together.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, there's some of the people on the panel were agreeing, I think, in ways he didn't expect us to agree.
Okay.
And so I thought he expected a knock him down.
You were the one that was disagreeing or the one that was agreeing?
I actually, you know what? I was in the agreeing camp a lot, or maybe other people were agreeing with me. I guess I'll get my overinflated ego, right? But, people were agreeing with each other, right?
Okay. So I heard from you that the entire panel actually ended up with you going out.
Oh, no, not the entire panel. So Klaus, who asked me to sit on the panel, was nice enough. He invited me and a couple other panelists out for dinner afterwards and a couple other folks as well. And we stopped. He took, I sincerely appreciate his hospitality. We stopped this wonderful restaurant and I couldn't read the menu. And then when I got the American menu, I didn't understand what was on it.
Similar to Japan, I guess. You visited Japan.
Yeah. So I let Klaus order for me. He got, we looked at different things. I got the mountain goat, the Austrian mountain goat with, and then some nice dumpling soup. You're laughing at me. I thought mountain goat would be sort of tough and whatever. It was fantastic. And the dumpling soup was, I nearly picked up the bowl and like slurped it up, but I was on my best manners.
Did you bring any of that with you back?
No. Well, the other thing too is they had some potatoes and this other stuff that looked like, my best way to describe it is it looked like lumpy phlegm that tasted like, that had like a horseradish taste to it. And it complemented the meat and the potatoes fantastically. I could have.
Wow. Gene, I have to stop you because you're making me hungry, which means that we have to end this podcast.
No, we don't. I can't explain to you exactly how good dinner was. Of course, Klaus and some of the other panelists, they're great conversationalists, great people to spend the evening out with, goofing around. And
great that you had a lot of fun. Next time I'm coming with you.
If you want to, you can. The other interesting thing is I wasn't aware of this, okay, but hotels in Germany, you need to put your room key in this little slot in order for the electricity to come on in the room. And it's not like I stayed at like a cheap room. It's not like I cheaped out and stayed at a cheap place. I felt like going down to the desk and say, do you need like an extra 10 bucks or whatever so I can have electricity all the time? Or what's the deal?
You got to travel a bit more to Germany, I guess.
I didn't like that at all. And it's like, why is that how? And so I asked him. So I'm at dinner. Whenever it's like, am I in a flop house? Or it's like, no, that's just how it works.
Yeah, no,
I did test though. I mean, I could have put any card in there to keep the lights on, but I think if I would have, someone would have come down and.
Yeah, well, it wasn't necessarily my room key. So next time I'll go there, I'll pay attention to all those insights.
Well, the other thing I found out too is here's my other observation: you have to ask for your bill in the restaurant. like I was real tired one night, and like it was the last time I was there, you know, because I couldn't get a flight on Sunday for how it works. So Sunday I was there and I had some dinner and I ordered, I thought, two things, and the waitress didn't understand me or whatever else. And so what else is new, right?
Did you get the mountain goat again?
No, I did not get mountain goat. I could not find the mountain goat restaurant. Otherwise I would have gone back there. But anyway, so I went and I ordered something and I dozed off, right? Because I was just so tired. And I woke up, it was like an hour later, you know, no bill. No. I thought, hey, they'd throw me out or something, but nope.
Okay. Well, it was very insightful, Gene. So thank you very much for sharing with our listeners all those details. if you have any questions for us, please send us an email at podcast@timesys.com. Again, we are very much interested in any comments, suggestions for future topics. So please let us know.
Yeah, we get a lot of emails at podcast@timesys.com. Don't be shy. So some people write in and they're like, well, I don't know if you've heard this before. And just write. And chances are, if you write to us, we'll get back to you shortly. So it varies, because I know that sometimes we're on the road, but we do our best effort to make sure we write back to people that write into us.
Yep. Thank you very much, Gene.
Thank you
for your attention.
All right, bye.
This podcast was brought to you by TimeSys. Are you new to embedded Linux? Looking for a way to simplify your next project? The Linux Link service by TimeSys makes it easy to build your custom embedded Linux platform. Go to timesys.com today or call 866-392-4897 to learn more.